Elevate your cloud game. Expert strategies for cloud native operations. Hi, everyone. My name is John Kuntz, and welcome to this special edition of the Cloud Collective podcast. In today's episode, I am super excited to welcome Raji Rajan, an expert in hyperscaler and cloud native services. He will be offering essential insights for anyone who is embarking on the digital transformation within their organization, including addressing some of the common pitfalls and mistakes executives also encounter. Welcome to the show, Raji. How are you doing today?
Thanks. Thank you, John. Nice to be on your show.
It's great to have you. So before we get started, I always like to let the guests do a little bit of an introduction, share a little bit about your background with our listeners. You can start anywhere you want, but specifically tell us how you got into this cloud native services, hyperscaler management of infrastructure.
Thank you, John. And hello, my dear audience. I have around 2.5 decades of experience in IT in leading, driving the agenda of innovation and digital transformation. I have worked with a lot of multinational service providers, product companies, so on and so forth. I joined IBM Kindle around 7 years back, and I am currently the director for public cloud and modern operations. I lead, public cloud services offering portfolio, along with modern ops, the new way of operations into a public cloud world. And around 2 years back, we were trying to innovate onto the managed services. And then that's where the whole idea of cloud native services evolved. And that's how the whole story began.
Excellent. Yeah. It's interesting. As we begin to see more of our clients and customers migrate their applications to a cloud, one of the cloud native or hyperscalers. We talked about that's great and fine for the application side of the business, but you still got to run the operations, right? And so I guess my first question to you is, what are some of the significant benefits for companies that have successfully employed a sort of a cloud native strategy into their management of their hyperscaler operations?
Good, John. I think that's a very interesting question. So when we think of cloud, now we are in an era of thinking of applications for the cloud, on the cloud, and by the cloud. We don't think of those applications as a data center plus applications. If you really want to harness the cloud, we need to do cloud native services. Cloud adoption majorly, which is getting now and the customers are on their journey, is how I can do cloud native applications, right? Now, cloud native platform, what we have seen and are also built by analysts, is at the foundation of over 95% of new digital initiative by 2025. 95% of new digital initiative by 2025, which is roughly up from 40% in 2021. So that's a huge adoption of cloud native platforms. So cloud native system enable customers and business to migrate, modernize, and optimize critical workloads on cloud environments by utilizing the well-architected framework of hyperscalers. But as we move these applications, one key component of this journey is to have an operating model that supports the deployment, scaling, and operations of cloud native applications. And that's where cloud native application platform management system comes, where it is like an operating system which serves as the basic underlying operating model that supports the deployment, scaling, and operations of application environment. So just to have few benefits, in a traditional managed services, the cost of a centralized tool infrastructure is roughly 30%. Or if you move to cloud native, we don't need these external tools. So there is an estimated cost reduction by 20 to 30%. Just imagine cloud itself has become so mature that we don't need external tools. If we use cloud native services, we can save the cost by roughly 20 to 30%. Cost reduction, I will say, as one. Number two, which comes to my mind, is predictability. When we do these cloud native services, we utilize infrastructure as a code, automated operations, SRE, and those principles, they come into picture. That helps in reducing the human errors and increase our service reliability. So my cost goes down and my predictability of the system goes up. That will be my number two. And number three will be, I think, the flexibility and agility. As we know, no system can exist on their own in isolation. And what these cloud native services helps us provide is very flexible integration. And by increasing the use of native management services, say for monitoring, patching, backup, security, we can onboard the customer at minimal cost. And this protects our existing investment in the company's preferred tool through API-based integration with cloud-native services as needed. So cost reduction, predictability, and flexibility. And how it is helping all three of them? If I can summarize in one sentence, it is accelerated cloud adoption. By helping reducing the cost, by being more predictable, by being more flexible, easy to manage, scalable cloud environment, helps us in adoption of cloud in a more accelerated manner.
Wow, interesting. The way I interpret that is that the organizations are, let's say the business units of an organization, are deploying their applications in as cloud native applications on any of the major hyperscalers. And they're obviously doing that because they get a lot of benefits. But it sounds like what you're saying is, in some cases, people forget that you still have to go and manage it in the back end, right? So you still have to still care and feeding, if you will, of that underlying infrastructure, albeit still in the hyperscaler world. And if you do it like you did it when it was in the data center, you're really leaving a lot of, not only, as you said, cost money, you're spending more money than you need to. It's going to take you longer and you're not going to be as productive. And you're not going to be able to react as fast to the changes in the business environment. Is that a sort of a fair summarization?
Yep, John, I think that's perfect. And you have said it. I think it's not only reduces costs, but it helps me making more flexible, more predictable, and my adoption increases. Because now I'm able to see the cloud managed services the way they are. And believe me, when we talk about managed services, we are talking about 2.5-year, 5-year contracts, right? So it's not like we just do it and disappear. We have to live with that system for the rest of the contract of our developer customers. So they have a long kind of effect onto the whole idea of cloud adoption.
Excellent. So let's move on to it totally makes sense to me, right? It's if you're going to be forward thinking on the application side, you need to bring that same sort of thinking onto the back, actually with the infrastructure management side of it. So I'm guessing a lot of organizations, and I know you've got a lot of experience in doing this. So what are some of the couple of mistakes or pitfalls that many organizations either fall into, or obviously they should try to avoid to be successful in this strategy?
So I think, based on our experience and learnings and adoption, which we are seeing globally of cloud native services, I would say the attachability of the solution should also be thought of. When we start writing a solution or a platform or a framework, think of it in isolation. But in customers' world, in a real life scenario, there is no one perfect solution. They may be having some other tools, they may be having some other methodology, they have their own framework, they have a wide variety of customer workloads. So how do you make your system attachable to all of them? So there is no rip and replace thought process. The adoption increases if I'm making myself more attached to the existing customer realities of their own systems. So use API-based integration. use modularity into your approach when you're writing these systems. Think of all the layers in which you can inject yourself, because once this system gets kicking into custom environment, you will see a lot many people want to attach themselves for managed services. How do you attach them? That's number one. Number two is scalability. We write these systems in a very ad hoc manner, but just imagine we are writing it for one customer environment. Now, seeing the success, because it is reducing costs, more and more workloads are coming into system. It is getting used for one type of application, the next type of application, then data, then AI, then GenAI. You can dream of all the applications which can float on top of it. How I can create this in a manner that in a hub and spoke architecture, so I don't need to do a lot of stuff if I onboard customer, how I can make it scalable. So attachability, scalability, and the third one is secure by design. Security should not be thought of as an afterthought, because cost of injecting a security is less too much once the system gets going. So how I can design the system so any workload which is coming is secure and compliant by design. I can integrate DevSecOps processes. I can enable audit, logging, cloud security posture management. All the best practices should be there from the day zero itself. So my top three will be: make a system which is attachable, make a system which is scalable, and make a system which is secure by design.
So I'm guessing that some organizations don't do all that up front. They, like you said, they address security, but they do it after everything's been deployed and the initial management has been set up. And the other thing I noticed is there's a reason why there are, I'll say, three major hyperscalers, right? AWS, Azure, or Google, for instance, which is because they all have different benefits, different architectures, different for basically based on your workload, one makes more sense over the other. Because certainly I remember maybe 5 or 6 years ago, a lot of organizations said, we're going to try and standardize on one particular hyperscaler. And obviously that I'm sure there's somebody out there that's on one, but 99% of the people I run into have multiple public cloud hyperscaler services because it's, again, they're better suited for each particular application. And which I'm guessing then means that the back end infrastructure management is probably different for each one because they're architected differently. But it sounds like what you're trying to do is create an overarching framework that reduces the complexity, reduces the costs, makes it more agile or more productive for the team, if you will, that's managing that infrastructure. But obviously the secret and the sauce, I'm guessing, is that you can't try to take the underlying architecture on how you do that is going to be unique to each one of the service provider or the hyperscalers, correct?
Yep. The framework, the operating model is cloud agnostic, right? But the actual execution is AWS specific, Google specific, and Azure specific. So think of it like this. They are like, when we deploy an application, we roughly use 1,000 to 1,500 cloud services. Now, these cloud services are very different from for AWS, for Azure, and for Google. But the backup process remains the same. So the process of backup remains the same, but we need to inject different cloud services from different cloud providers to make it a cloud-specific thing, right? But the underlying design, the thought process remains the same for all three of them.
So that sounds like to me what probably the biggest mistake organizations would make is trying to bring that tool set that they've been using in their traditional data center or on their on-prem or the private cloud world and try to apply it to each, exactly the same to each of the hyperscalers, which I think is what you alluded to earlier, which is why you end up spending 30% more than you probably have to.
Yeah, and exactly. And that was the time when cloud services were not mature enough to answer these things, and you needed some tools to do that. But now cloud providers have way gone beyond providing these services. And We don't need these type of tools as heavyweights from day one itself, right? And the tools is, the idea of tools itself is slowly fading away. Cloud providers are providing those services, their own DR, their own management, their own failover. We don't need to buy most of the tools from outside.
Makes sense. All right, excellent. So one last question I like to, and then we'll wrap it up. But so you talked about a lot of different things, and definitely there's a lot of benefits, potential benefits. What advice would you give someone who wants to begin to optimize the management of their public cloud infrastructure? So how do you get started, right? What do you do? What would you do next? After listening to the show, what would you do next if you wanted to get more into this?
Yeah. So my pick will be, I think, two or three things which I may suggest to anybody who wants to onboard this cloud native journey. First, don't think of infrastructure support or support of some services. Think of a platform managed services. You're building a platform for developers. The idea of I'm building this platform for operations is slowly fading away. I'm building this platform for developers. So think of a developer and create a platform for a developer. Operations can be done, but developer is the prime customer persona which we need to drive. Right? He's our ultimate buyer, or she is our ultimate buyer, right? So think of a platform managed services. What I mean, don't restrict ourselves from availability of the environment or backup or patching. Think of DevSecOps, think of release, think of security. All these things are very much relevant to a developer, which can be done using this cloud native services. Second is, it is automation and infrastructure as a code. Enhance the engineering skills within your own organization. Instead of engineers, instead of doing operations, we are doing engineering, right? And that's the transition we all are going through. We are slowly seeing people needing these SRE skills, the engineering skills, who can see a system and write some workflows and automation using infrastructure as a code and do this cloud native services of integrations, right? My two cents will be, number one is, think of a platform for developers. Second, enhance our engineering and automation skills.
That's a great piece of advice. Thanks. All right. Let's wrap this up. In conclusion, I want to really thank you, Rishi, for a great interview. I always learn a lot. So I actually have one more question. So how can people learn more about what we just talked about and get started with this cloud native management? What would you suggest we'll put it in the show notes. Obviously, we'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile so people can get a hold of you and create a conversation if they have any questions or just want to learn more. But what else would you recommend people maybe go to get started and learn more about what we just talked about?
Yeah. As an organization, Kyndryl, we are offering these type of services which can be digitally procured using our Kyndryl Bridge. So you can go to that website and learn more, procure more, enhance your organization capability of cloud native services. All these benefits are there available digitally, which can be procured. Second, I would like to say is go through some of these AWS, Azure, and Google best practices of cloud native services, because the world is changing so fast and we can only take what is relevant to our context. So look at these AWS, Azure, Google hyperscalers and read about cloud native and see what is those 80% of the problem which can be done using that 20% of the solution. Once you do that 80-20 mapping, you can go to Kyndryl Bridge and procure the services, the ready-made assets which you already have.
Great. And we'll put a link to the Kyndryl Bridge marketplace in the show notes, and it's a great place. You go directly to it and you can learn a little bit more off self-service basis on, there's white papers and case studies and things like that. And if you so choose, you can schedule a consult with a subject matter expert. That's all I've got. I will tell you that there's a few points that I think to remember. One is there's a big opportunity to save some money, particularly if you don't have to bring an existing tool set into the management world. Second, there's a productivity savings. that you can bring both to you and your organization. And third, there's this agility factor where you can quickly react to anything that's happening in the marketplace. And the fourth thing I'd always say is you don't have to do this by yourself. There's lots of ways to engage organizations and service providers and subject matter experts such as Rishi to help you, even if it's just some upfront consulting and help you figure out where to go and how to get started. This is John Kuntz. Thanks, Rishi, again. And thanks for joining us on this edition of the Cloud Collective podcast. And just one last point, you can succeed in managing and optimizing your cloud infrastructure management costs and being financially accountable and the predictability of the highly variable expenses of the cloud by creating an operating model that really engages enterprise IT, finance, and your business teams. Thanks again, Rishi. It's great to talk to you. Have a great day.
Thank you, John. Nice talking to you. Bye.